So we're up to Kohelet. We're up to what they call the third chapter, the ninth pasuk. And Shlomo HaMelech says, "Ma'itro na'oseh ba'asher hu amel." The simple meaning of the words are, what benefit is there for a person to work so hard? Meaning, he just described et ve'et, and et and et. There's a time for this, there's a time for that. So if everything goes by the time, then what difference does it make how hard you work? There are times that will succeed and times that won't succeed. And you could work your head off. My grandfather tried to bring ice cream trucks to Israel. But at that time, it didn't work. 10 years later, Tnuva did the same thing, and suddenly it worked well. Same idea. 10 years earlier, 10 years later.
She played the same music?
Then it stopped, I'm saying. But there were many fads. Tivol, what they have today. My grandfather tried to bring to Israel. Vegetarian hot dogs, vegetarian schnitzels. This goes back about 35, 40 years ago. They tried manufacturing it. No one was interested. Today it's a huge hit. Everyone, long before Tivol existed, my grandfather tried to import it. Didn't work. So if everything's contingent on timing, if everything's it, if it's all beyond our control, so then Shlomo HaMelech says, "Ma'itrona oseba sheru amel." What are you working hard for? I'm saying that's pashup shot. Obviously, like you're saying, you have to try. How do you know? Maybe it's the right timing.
Maybe like there's a difference like in the advertising and this thing too. Like, I mean, if you're, he says your grandfather, if he was like one guy, like maybe didn't have the same kind of advertising budget as these big companies, so they don't know that.
Could be.
Also, if it's the time that it's not going to work and you try, it's not going to work anyway. But if it's the time that it is going to work and you don't try, then it's not going to work also.
So Shlomo HaMelech didn't say you shouldn't try. He said, why is he a mill? Don't work too hard. If it's the right timing, it's going to work. And if it's the wrong timing, it's not going to work. Again, I'm saying pshat because like Rav Saadia Gaon writes in his introduction to Koheles, the pshat of Koheles is that it's a quest, trial and error. And that's why Chazal had an issue with including it in Tanakh, because Tanakh is Dvar Hashem, and Dvar Hashem is right from the start. It's not trial and error. And that's why Chazal said, this book could be misleading, because on the surface, it's not God talking. It's a human being saying, well, what's right in the world? I can't figure it out. If it's this, then not that. And if it's that, then not this. And that's why I said, pshat, that's what Shlomo HaMelech just said. That if everything here is about the timing, so then why should a person work bashehu amel? Why work too hard? If mazel is going to be on your side, it's going to succeed, and if not, not. Shlomo is going to refute that. But that's pshat in the pasuk.
Don't worry about the chlal, like everything. I thought like only Torah was directly what Hashem was saying. Everything after that, like the Nevi'im, it was like, you know, what Hashem was saying to them, but they had to put it like in the way in their capability of wording it, and like as you start getting the Ketuvim, I thought that was also on a lower level. So I thought like as we get, like as we further get, like why would it be such a hard time to put it in there, especially when they're throwing in Ketuvim? That is like, I mean, we're not expecting that it's gonna be like, you know, like Torah, like what Moshe brought down for us.
Right, but we are expecting that if it's Dvar Hashem, you don't have another sefer in Tanakh that has doubt. You have Eov, which is philosophical arguments, but you don't have a sefer like Koheles, which says, well, I tried this and it didn't work, and I tried that and that didn't work, and I thought maybe this would work, and that didn't work either. Why does that belong in Tanakh? Okay. You know, that's, so Chazal had an issue with including in Tanakh that we might misunderstand. The deeper pshat that Chazal tell us is that what benefit will a person have when he does evil? When he works so hard to do it, even though he thinks he's accomplishing, but at the end of the day, Hashem is going to take him to task over it. That's what Chazal said that day. He wasn't talking about stam. Obviously, you have to do ishtadlut. Shlomo HaMelech was saying, Ma'itrona oseh. This is always that added the added, like, parenthetical remark that our Chazal stick into all the psukim, as we've seen up until now in Kohelet, that here it's talking about the good and here it's talking about the bad. There's just like a subject missing from the sentence, which wasn't obvious to Chazal. It's obvious that, obviously, what are you going to say? Why should I do a mitzvah? Why should I work hard to get lulav and esrog? If it's meant to be, it'll happen. No. Go out there and find your lulav and find your esrog. So he's not talking about a mitzvah. What is he talking about? He's talking about averos. He's talking about evil. So Chazal interpreted it to mean that's talking about doing evil. What are you working so hard at? You think you've moved forward? Don't worry, Hashem's watching over everything. And that goes in line with what we saw Chazal's interpretation of et milchaman, et shalom, and lakol zaman. That Chazal said there's a time that Hashem will give you peace, and there's a time that Hashem takes care of people, etc. Yeah. Laila tov.
Would it be possible to say
that... Yisrael Baruch, you want to make your wife a grilled cheese? I meant she'll have one in the morning. She'll see you thought of her.
He's got the machines.
Ah, okay. But he doesn't have the cheese and whatever. Yeah.
Would it be possible to say that, in a way, maybe if you reach a point where you're trying very hard to do something, and you reach the point where maybe you need to realize maybe this is not the time to be doing what you're trying to do, and you should seek something different to do, which is maybe what Hashem wants you to do now.
Right, that's the tough question. When does Ishtadlus exceed the emuna that at the end of the day there's a boss to the world? And that's a big discussion in Halacha. That there are times where Ishtadlut is antithetical to the idea that Hashem is running the world. Sometimes a person's Ishtadlut can indicate that he believes that the only thing that matters is my Ishtadlut. And if I work hard enough, this is going to work. And that's a balancing act. That's the Chazon Ish wrote a whole letter about this. Emunah u'bitachon. To explain, how do you balance that? When do you say what? And it depends depends on each person and on each scenario and on each madrega. I had a friend in yeshiva who wasn't dating. So you could be 19 and not date, and you could be 22 and not date. But when he hit 23, I said to him, why aren't you dating? So he said, no one's setting me up. So I tried to set him up once. Fine. I come to him a year later. He's 24. I said, are you going out? He said, yeah, you set me up a year ago. I said, and since then what? He said, nothing. I said, but a year's passed. This is your prime season. You know, what are you going to wait till you're 30? You have to date. He said, yeah, but no one's setting me up. I started talking to people, and I said, I tried to get him set up. I got him one more date. Fine. I come to him when he's 25, and he's dated twice. You know, now these are the prime years when a guy's in yeshiva. Prime time. Okay. I'm trying, and I can't get anywhere. And finally, someone sets him up, and he got married with the third girl. So now, what's pshat? Other people, I dated over 50 girls. And until I finally...
You did personally?
Me personally, yeah. I worked very hard looking and searching and trying. This guy wasn't doing too much ishtadlus. And boom, he's married, okay. The Rambam says it depends on a person's madrega. The amount of ishtadlut he should do, depending on the person. But it's always a question. What's the balance? Where are you crossing that line where your actions indicate that you believe you run the world? And that's a good question. Meaning, so we generally say that there's a balanced amount of ishtadlut that's logical. That it's logical that if you do this much, then you'll do it. You'll get the outcome. And less than that, it's not logical you'll get it. A guy says, I tried getting a job. What you do? I wrote a resume. Did you send it anywhere? No, but it's on my computer. That's not enough ishtadlus, right? On the other hand, do I have to send it to a million places? No, that's too much ishtadlus. Okay, where's the balance? So it's somewhere in between. So in each question, there is that question. But you're right. We could interpret the pasuk that's also basher hu amel. If you work too hard, you should realize that's not what's going to resolve the issue. But we also have to know that v'chol asher hu oseh, Hashem matzliach biyado. Hashem created a world where the hatzlacha is connected to kol asher hu oseh. We do have to do a certain amount of ishtadlut, and without that we're not going to succeed, even if in Shemayim they want us to succeed. Sometimes Hashem says, no, it's up to you. And that's very often. You don't find that a person sits back and does nothing and everything works out for him. It doesn't usually happen. What do you mean?
I'm saying, Nahag Monit. You find that if you sit in the sukkah until 2 o'clock and you leave for work afterwards, you make the same amount of money if you're going to leave earlier and stay longer.
Yeah, I find the biggest ma'aminim are Nahagei Moniot.
Yeah.
They always tell me, Parnasa Mishamayim, you can't outsmart Hashem. Whatever you're supposed to make, you're going to make. And they all tell me, now, I mean, yeah, you have those that are all nervous.
Person that's standing there waving you down, and then a block away you see him with a flat tire. Well, you pick somebody else a block away that's going further, and you're gonna make more money.
Yeah. Now, Gemoniot, I hear this all the time. Whenever I take a manit, I try talking to them. And I also often tell them, hey, if you want to pick someone up on the way, I don't mind. Just be honest with them. Just tell them that you're dropping me off at this place first. And very often I get that answer. You think I need your help? I'm going to make whatever Hashem wants me to make. Kacha or kacha. And they tell me these stories all the time. And I find that, yeah. Okay. You know, the Gemara says different professions breed Yirat Shamayim. So in the Gemara's time, they didn't have Nagei Moniot. I came to this Maskana a few weeks ago. When I heard this, like the 50th or 60th time, I said, it must be that Monit breeds Yirat Shamayim. I'm serious, I'm not joking.
I took one guy, says, I waited until I saw a UOD, because there were like 20 taxis standing there, and he flamed me down. In the middle of the road, it flares me down. But I have to go to Ramot fast because I have a business thing and I have to be there. It's millions of dollars after me dispersing. Get to Ramot. I miss the turnaround. The whole thing took turn around 3 minutes. He started screaming, "You don't know, I'm going to lose millions." You get there. Everything's fine, but it's a dead end, so I have to go all the way around to get back.
No.
Then I see this guy running to somebody else. He finished. He's running to somebody else. I said, I have to listen to what's happening here. So I open up the window. And he said, "Why should I haven't seen you in 30 years. And that's because of the 3 minutes that we had to go around. If not, he would have finished it, he would have went, and he wouldn't have seen this person that he hasn't seen in 30 years.
So it's $1 million he was worried about losing over those 3 minutes. He's totally forgot about it when he saw
the first one. Yeah. No problem. Yeah. But his friend that he hasn't seen in 30 years, it's only because of the 3 minute delay.
Yeah.
I call it Shammai.
Yeah. Yeah, I could write a book of the stories like this that I hear from night. Ah, yeah?
All the stories.
Yeah. No,
I
of Monit, yeah.
If somebody crashes into you, what does he have to pay? Only the nezek, or also the hours that you're not working? It's a halacha question. I got an answer. He only has to pay the nezek.
Thank you.
The hours that you're not working. You show me the whole thing. That's because of what happened. It's not
the
grammar. He doesn't have to pay. Even if it takes a day and you're not working a day because of that nizik, he only has to pay the nizik.
I find the strangest thing, I think I did tell you once before, that I find when I consistently practice hard on my violin, I get a lot more work than when I'm not practicing. And nobody knows that I'm practicing, so there's just no logical explanation for it. On the other hand, when I finished university, I had 2 months of a lot of work, and then 1 month of no work, And then I realized that's the sign to go to yeshiva. I saved up exactly enough money for 3 months at Mechon Meir, which took me exactly to the time when I had to travel to Brazil.
את הכל עשה יפה ואיתו. So Shlomo HaMelech, Hashem made everything have, everything works nicely in its set time. And again, here you have multiple interpretations by Chazal. We'll just finish the pasuk. Gam et ha'olam natan b'libam. I'll translate literally, and then we'll expand, because there are different perushim, and each one adds a lot of words. The literal meaning here is Gam et ha'olam, the world too, or the ways of the world, Hashem gave to people to understand. Mibeli asher lo imtza ha'adam et ha'maaseh asher asa Elokim merosh ve'ad sof. Where a person cannot master the way Hashem runs the world from beginning to end. Meaning, you could understand a little bit of how Hashem runs the world, but you're never going to understand everything about how Hashem runs the world. So, et hakol asa, everything that Hashem created in the world, He made it yafeh, it's good, but only beito, at its set time. Meaning, you have to know when to apply which of the things Hashem created in the world. And if you're going to try to apply it at an improper time, then it's not yafeh. Meaning, daval beito ma tov. You take a loaf of an esrog to shul, and Pesach, it's not going to work. Gam et ha'olam, the way of the world, natan b'libam, Hashem gave people in their hearts the capacity to understand ultimately where the world is headed, if they'll only spend the time to think about it. But with the following clause, mibeli asher lo imtza ha'adam et ha'maaseh asher asa Elokim merosh v'ad sof. You can understand in a general sense, but you can't understand everything. There's no way that a person can figure out everything about the world that Hashem created. So that's one understanding in the pasuk. The Targum over here says the following explanation. He says, Shlomo HaMelech said with prophecy, which already puts the Targum with one opinion in the Machlokas, did Shlomo HaMelech have Nevuah? All of Shlomo HaMelech's books are in Ksuvim. So the Meiri and other Rishonim hold that Shlomo HaMelech never had Nevuah. He only had Ruach HaKodesh. And that's why all his works are in Ksuvim. The Meiri, in his introduction to Mishlei, says, what about the great wisdom and the dream that he had? And yeah, that's all up to Ruach HaKodesh. But Nevuah is bigger than Shlomo. He never got there, and that's why he never got there. He was talking to Hashem in a dream, on a Madrega of Ruach HaKodesh, not Nevuah. So in his dream, Hashem asked him a question, and he answered, sure, the Gemara brings. I don't remember who it was, but you know the Gemara in Tanit, no? That he was Mekizdam. One of the Amoram was very, very poor. He let blood, and he had nothing to eat. And after you let blood, you have to eat something. He comes home, and there's no food at home, except for a thing of garlic. So he's famished, and he just let blood. He had this medical procedure where he has to eat something. So he takes a whole thing of garlic, takes a bite, and drops dead. Faints on the spot, and his heart can't handle it, and he's lying there half alive, half dead. The students rush in, they see him like that, and they see him over there crying, smiling, and a beam of light comes out of his head, and then he wakes up. So they asked him, what's going on? So he said, well, Hashem spoke to me, and I said to him, I'm suffering so much in this world. Look at how poor I am. I don't even have normal food to eat. So Hashem said, well, that's your mazel. A person's wealth is dependent on his mazel. That's how I created the world. Based on the way you were born, b'ni chaye umezone lo bezchuta talya milta, ela b'mazla talya milta. The Gemara says, b'ni, whether a person will have children, chaye, how long a person will live, umezone, and a person's parnasa, is not contingent on his merits, but rather on the mazel a person is born in.
I thought we didn't believe that applied to Jews.
Oh, so there are two midrashim. One midrash says Jews don't have a mazel. The other midrash says Jews can overcome their mazel. So it's a machlokas tanoim and machlokas amoram. So this opinion goes with the opinion that we have a mazel, only we can overcome it.
So what would his answer be that when he asks why am I living like this, he says that's just your mazel?
Okay, so it's a good question that deserves a whole class on mazel, which we said we have to have. What is mazel? And
So you could say it, if you have a mazel, then it doesn't matter because you can overcome it. And
it's not so simple to overcome it. Avraham Avinu tries for 99 years and is unsuccessful. It's only in the year 100 that he succeeds. The Gemara brings a whole conversation Hashem had with him. He said, Hashem said, you want, I'll destroy the world, we'll start from scratch, and maybe you'll be born in a different mazel. He says, maybe? Hashem says, well, we'll see. You know? Okay, so the Gemara brings a whole discussion there between him and Hashem. So you see, in a dream, that wasn't Nevuah. In a dream, he could talk to Hashem. Lavan has a dream, he talks to Hashem. A dream where a person talks to Hashem doesn't have to be Nevuah.
So it's also mazel to have your mazel.
Right.
But, I'm going to say, so Parnasa. Okay,
The potential of Parnasa. Will a person realize his potential or not? That depends on his ishtadlut. But the potential of parnasa, meaning you see two people enter the same field, one's a millionaire and one's a pauper. Why? So it's not only about wits. Sometimes they both worked just as hard and did everything just as right, and this guy ends up rich and this guy ends up poor.
Well, what about Rosh Hashanah?
Good question. Deserves a much longer on the Seder. No, it's a good question. You know, the Ramban wrote a whole thing about it. We started learning it. Say that. You want, we have to go back to the Ramban.
That reminds me that somebody that I worked for once said that it was like the son of a good friend of theirs or whatever started one of the first... This is kind of... It's a Shanuv Machloket kind of because of the topic, but he started one of the first gambling websites in Israel or something. And she said, like, she knew him since he was a kid, and he was really not a smart guy. Like, she was telling me the story because she was claiming that I'm better with computers than he was with computers, but he started this gambling website, and now he's, like, one of the richest guys in Israel. I think he's got over a billion shekels because of this gambling website. And she was, like, she cannot understand it. It was, like, such an ordinary, like, not smart, completely average guy making over a billion shekels on this website. The question is, I mean, like, committed from gambling websites, how do you explain that away?
Yep. So Shlomo said in prophecy.
No, I'm asking it away since it's.
That Israelis spend a billion shekels on gambling. That's very sad.
He also spend much more than a billion shekels on gambling because that's what he made is a billion.
Right.
Hashem made everything good in the time that he saw fit. Hashem saw fit that. There would be the Targum expands on the Pasuk in the days of Yeravam ben Nevat, and that fight would break up the kingdom, and in the days of Sheva ben Bichri it could have happened, meaning in David HaMelech's time there was a rebellion at the end of David's days. Sheva ben Bichri was able to amass people and start a rebellion after the rebellion of Avshalom, and that rebellion of Sheva ben Bichri could have been potentially, it had the same potential to divide the kingdom as happened in Shlomo's time with Yeravam ben Nevat. But Hashem said, if it happens in the days of Sheva ben Bichri, then there wouldn't be a Beit HaMikdash. Because then when Shlomo comes to kingdom, he doesn't have the people unified. He doesn't have the capacity to build the Sheva Beit HaMikdash. Et hakol asa yafeh v'ito, meaning Hashem is guiding history. There's a time that this Hashem gives this potential to happen, and there's a time that Hashem does not. David HaMelech already did the Avera for which he deserved to have the kingdom divided. That's, I think, the deeper understanding here. Chazal say that when he misjudged Mephibosheth, the son of Yonatan, and said, "Amalti atav etzivat achlekut asadeh," when David said, "You divide all your assets with the servant," a heavenly voice came out and said, "And your kingdom's going to be divided." So why didn't it happen a week later when Sheva ben Bichri rebelled? The heavenly decree was there already. Says Shlomo HaMelech, et hakol asa yafeh v'ito. Hashem has a plan for world history. And everything has its time when it should happen. And even though David already deserved it, the decree was already there, but Hashem said, I want a Beis HaMikdash. And so Hashem put off the breakup of the kingdom so that the Beit HaMikdash would be built. And then Yeravam ben Nevat sinned. He built one egel in Beit El and one in Dan, and he set up and he set up guards so that people can't go up L'Regel. And Hashem said, if that were to happen in the days of Sheva ben Bichri, then you won't have people, you won't have all of Am Yisrael unified to build the Beit HaMikdash. So Hashem said, that's why Hashem put off the rebellion till later. Then he brings another example that he says that Hashem's hidden name was written on the Even Shtia, on that the stone in the Kodesh HaKodashim, and Hashem hid that hidden name because Hashem knew that if people would know how to use Hashem's name, so then they would use it improperly, and then they would know the future of the world, and so Hashem kept his hidden name hidden because the hidden name, says the Targum, is connected to the knowledge of when Mashiach would come and what the future holds for people.
Doesn't saying the name like improperly like cause death though, like
it can do a lot of things if you know how to manipulate
it. But I mean, like, there's like this one thing on the Tanakh, the Peshat, is that the guy said the name inappropriately and then boom, he just like struck down the spot, doesn't he?
What are you talking about? Peretzuzah? I don't know what you're referring to.
It says Hashem's name, and they're not supposed to say the name in vain, right? And it says like he says his name, and then boom, like, it's just, the guy dies. And then
I don't know what you're talking about. What, in Bamidbar?
No, not necessarily in Bamidbar, but like when they're in the Midbar, like they're in the camp, know. And the guy says the name, and then he dies on the spot.
The name
of
the
No, I don't think it says in the Chumash. Are you saying because it says Vaykovet Hashem? Vaykov Chazal say means he blasphemed. But that he spelled it out.
I thought he said the name. I don't know. Maybe.
So Rabbi the Kohen Gadol didn't know when Mashiach's coming? Because he'd say Hashem's only name on Yom Kippur.
I don't know. And the final thing he says, that Hashem kept hidden from us when a person's going to die. Because if a person... Because... And that's how he explained gam et ha'olam natan belibam mibeli asho lo imtza adam ta ma'ase asher asa Elokim mirosh v'atzof. Hashem didn't want us to know what the future holds. So that brings us to a whole philosophical discussion. We spend much of our time trying to forecast the future, and Hashem purposely made it that we cannot forecast the future.
When you say forecast, does that include like planning?
Well, we plan, but we also don't know what's to come. Now, if we knew what were to come, then we wouldn't be productive. Part of the reason we're productive is because we don't know when our last day is. We imagine a lot of things. We don't. We can function because we don't know what's coming. Now, I'm reading a fantastic book now called The History of Risk.
Like the game?
No.
I knew you were going to say.
The History of Risk in the World. No, because really it's called Against the Gods. That's and he discusses how the evolvement of mathematics and how the evolvement of mathematics led to the evolvement of philosophy. Because so long as people... couldn't forecast accurately because they didn't know statistics, so then they thought everything is about the gods. Life was about appeasing the gods because there was no logic to the world, there was no system. Until you reached a point where you could say statistically this is or isn't going
to
happen.
Yeah, statistics was not even pulling things through.
What?
Statistics aren't necessarily a great way of telling what's going to happen either, though.
Fine, but it allows you to go from complete gambling to making intelligent decisions. It's a different world.
Okay.
When you have to invest in a company, and your question is, should I invest? If you're talking about the shipping industry, where ships were sunk, so then the statistics help you, the whole idea of insurance, all these things developed and evolved when you had statistics, when you had a mathematical way of analyzing what are the odds that something's going to happen. And he draws out how things evolved, how world philosophy evolved, and it went hand in hand, because when you have no concept of math and you have no concept of statistics, then everything is up to the gods. There's no other way to explain why it's going to happen or not. And then the world remains primitive. It's a fantastic way of just viewing world history. The way the world viewed things because they didn't have any logical tools to deal with what was happening. So then why should this ship sink and that ship not? Depends on what the gods wanted. No, he connects it to the whole idea of Avodah Zarah. It's just I never thought of the world that way. I never looked at the world from a mathematical perspective. And in this book, he draws out world history and he shows how there's a very direct correlation between the breakaway from the church and the development of statistics, one after another. He draws it out. I don't buy a lot of what he says, because I see when he talks about Judaism and he talks about the Gemara and the Gemara's concepts of statistics, he's wrong. He doesn't know Gemara. It's written by two authors. I think one of them is Jewish. He quotes an Israeli, someone who wrote a book here about the history of statistics, who misquoted things in the Gemara. You know, he quotes one line from the Gemara. He doesn't begin to know what he's talking about. You know, the Gemara does talk about statistics. Mamash, even the line he quotes from the Gemara is wrong. It's just that he didn't understand. You know, if you open the Gemara to one line and you don't know the whole context, the Gemara talks about a situation where a Kohen marries a woman and finds out that she's not a virgin. So then we have to analyze what are the odds that she's prohibited on the Kohen. So the Gemara there is talking statistics. So he quotes one line in the Gemara, without the bottom line of the Gemara, and he thinks that, oh, you see, that they didn't have a logical, because they treated everything as 50-50. Well, they were discussing a situation where you have no idea. But there are other Gemaras which discuss where you do have an idea, where you find a girl out next to the well, and the Talmud says no one knows who the girl is. Is she Jewish or is she not Jewish? Then the Talmud starts discussing statistically who walks by the well, who lives in the city, who comes near the well, and then you attribute the child to the rove. And yet you have a lot of Gemaras that discuss statistics. So, you know, that's what I'm saying, because I don't know how accurate his other things are. I don't know enough about, well, I know that the one thing I do know something about, his quotes are inaccurate. But at the end of the day, coming back to the Pasuk, Shlomo HaMelech says, part of our capacity to develop is the fact that we don't know. And the fact that we haven't mastered nature and we don't have a control of the world, well, that's part of the reason why we can do things. A child tries to walk because he doesn't realize he's going to fall. And by the same token, we attempt things because we don't have control. We don't know where it's going to go. That's the idea of asmachta, that the Gemara says every time you enter a gamble, you're only entering it because you think you're going to win. I tell you, I have a friend who's a top businessman. He once said a very smart line, going back to what we discussed earlier tonight. He said, the only good deal is one that has a good out. Why? Because every person that entered every deal in the world always entered it thinking that he's going to win. That's why he entered the deal. And yet, at least half the time, and most of the time, people are losers. They don't win. Most businesses close down. Most businesses end up bankrupt. If not now, then tomorrow. Eventually, things close down. So, and nothing lasts forever, right? No industry.
Not necessarily lost, though.
Right, fine.
Who moved my cheese?
Ooh, right.
That's a very classical book.
I read it. Wow. I've recommended it to others.
I
recommended that book. I said that book, to my mind, is one of the greatest books. It should just be rewritten with God in the book. No. The philosophies are right. You just have to... They treat them all as contending with nature. And really, it's a... You can, if you just think for a minute from a Jewish perspective on the book, I think the book goes hand in hand with Chazal all the time. Mamash, I read the book... I was blown away. Yeah. I've been asking myself. The last month, I recommended it to a few people, and I was asking myself, maybe I should just rewrite it, sticking Hashem into the book, because it's the philosophies are right. It's I said over the story once in a nutshell, half a year ago. In a nutshell, it's about two types of mice. Every day they go through the maze. Every day they come to the same room. Every day there's cheese there. One day there's no cheese there. So The more primitive mouse looks around, sees no cheese, goes out and starts looking through the maze from scratch. Where is he going to find cheese? The more sophisticated mice stand there and start thinking and philosophizing. First, they pray for 3 days, and no cheese shows up. Then they start lamenting, it's not right, it's not fair, we deserve the cheese, we did nothing wrong to have the cheese taken away from us. And they start discussing why they should have the cheese, even though they're not getting the cheese. And then they say, we're going to protest. Who they're protesting against, they don't know, because they never realized who gave them the cheese. But they stand there discussing at length, deep thoughts, why they should really get the cheese, and why it should come back, and why... But it's not coming back. And then finally, one of them decides, I'm going out there to look. And the other one tells him, you know, you might die out there. Who knows what dangers are out there? And the first day, he doesn't go out. He's convinced. And then he realizes, hey, we're going to die of hunger here. I got to go out. So he goes out. And once he leaves the room, he realizes for a second what was keeping him in the room was fear of the unknown. And so he writes down on the wall, lesson number one, he says to himself, is... what would I do if I wasn't scared of what I don't know? And then as he goes through the maze, he discusses the things that keep him from advancing in life.
A little bit like a twist on Masala Ma'ara.
We gave one, but I'm saying there are like, I don't know how many messages in the book. Every time he stops and writes on the wall the next lesson that he learned, and after you think about it, you realize that these are lessons for life. Like, one of the points they point out there is that the primitive mice noticed day after day that the cheese got less and less and less. The sophisticated mice didn't notice it. And they said the same thing in life. Very often a person's in a position, and there are many indications that it's not going to last. We very often get closed on one approach, when in life you have to be dynamic and prepared to contend with the fact that it's not going to stay the way you want it. And it's not within your control. And now the question is, what do you do with it? So I wrote to a girl who was dating for many years and hasn't gotten married. I asked her to read the book. And then I told her, now we could talk about continuing to date. Why? Because the book develops an approach that says there are things that are out of my control, and in order for me to overcome them, I'm going to have to change, I'm going to have to deal with my fears, and I'm going to have to address the unknown. Those are the 3 points, but there are many more points in the book. And sometimes... so now where does Hashem has to enter the picture that it, in simply saying, what I want in this world is not necessarily what Hashem wants me to do in this world. And what the tools that I want Hashem to give me are not necessarily what He's going to give me. And the opportunities that I want in the world are not necessarily the opportunities Hashem's going to give me. You just stick Hashem into the book. And it's really true, I think, Torah philosophies. It's just, you know, I was floored. But I think it's a brilliant book. Brilliant day. Yeah, it's only a few pages. I read it in 1.5 hour. Cool. Like 40 minutes. It's.
There's also a little stuff for kids also.
Yeah? Yeah. So, but, no. So that's what he's saying here, that part of, that's what Mr. Dolinsky is connecting to the Pasuk, that part of what Hashem created in the world is the unknown. So that can be a challenge, but that's also part of what Hashem wanted us to overcome.
I'm just kind of curious on that side. You said there was a primitive mouse that left in the beginning, and then there's this other mouse that had to take all this convincing.
Yeah.
Did the smart mouse end up coming into the primitive mouse or something like that? Like, did they ever bump into each other?
He ends up finding cheese. I don't remember if he ends up finding the same cheese as the primitive mouse. Are they in the same room?
Been sitting there eating and gnashing.
Yeah, he's been eating and gnashing. Yeah, he keeps describing how the primitive mouse is very well off. Because this is part of being primitive, is that you deal. You don't stop and start thinking, well, this shouldn't have happened, and it's not fair, and it should never happen again, and it's going to get back, and it's going to be better.
It's like Shakespeare spoke, quote about, like, ignorance is bliss, because, like, what you don't know is not going to hold you back, right?
Shakespeare?
I think it's Shakespeare, right? Ignorance is bliss.
I don't know. Tough.
That's not really a Jewish concept to say that ignorance is bliss, though, is it?
No, but the concept to adapt... and not to think that we can decide what the future should be is a Jewish concept. And very often people are not willing to adapt. You see, people lose their job and they're not willing to think of another job. You know,
like someone that's an executive doesn't exactly want to go work at as a janitor.
Right,
get it when people say that they can't find a job. Like, who cares what your job was before? Find a job until you find a better job. I mean,
right.
Even if you're just like flipping burgers at McDonald's or whatever, I mean, like, right. Of course you can find a job. You're just being like too picky but whatever, you know.
Come with you. The Gemara said, Pshot nevelot bashuk, bal titzlech labriot. Pshot nevelot bashuk, do the most filthy job. Even today, it's considered the worst job, to skin the animals. They always give that to the Arabs, because no Jew wants to do it. The animal's all stinky, and it's hard work, and it's a filthy work, and to take the hides off the animal and deal with all the dirt and filth. So it's the Gemara says, yeah, do that, and do it in a public place where everyone sees you're doing the lowest job. And even if you were once a rabbi, at the end of the day, you should be doing that rather than being in at a point where you need other people. That's a Gemara's term.
You can see, like the people that clean up, pick up the garbage and stuff like that. I remember my aunt back in Canada, because it's like a job that nobody wants, right? She used to say, because in Toronto, there's a lot of times that those people were always protesting or whatever, right? And my aunt would always agree with them. She's like, you know what? I don't care whatever they're getting paid. They're not getting paid enough, because I can't imagine what's going through. Like, they have to deal with other people's garbage. You don't know what's in there, whatever. And, here, it's like, see people cleaning up garbage, you're thinking, wow, what's the deacon? We're cleaning up the streets of Eretz Yisrael, right? So it's this basic job that nobody wants, but it's like people are looking, there are people that are looking at them and thinking, wow, this person's huge.
Shlomo Amar says, Yadati ki ein tov bam. So the literal meaning is, I know that there's nothing good in them. Nothing good in them. So Shlomo HaMelech, Kim nismach v'lasot tov b'chayav. So the only good is to be happy and to do good in their life. And that's, this pasuk is, if you think about it, it's a whole philosophy. Yadati ki ein tov bam. I know, says the Targum, that there's no good in humanity other than to be happy and do good in their lives. Now, if I were writing the pasuk, I would switch the order. Right? Wouldn't you say first do good and then be happy?
You need to be happy in order to do good.
So, one understanding here is, I think we can say like you. Maybe it's not necessary, but it's a healthier way to do it.
I agree with you. I would have flipped it.
You just said do good and then be happy. So Rashi learns.
Even goes back to what you were saying before, the fake it till you make it sort of thing.
Right.
And then as you start doing it, maybe you're not so happy that you're there doing good deeds, but after a while, you start to get happier and doing the good deeds makes people even happier about that in itself.
Okay. So the Targum says keenly smoch, to be happy with the Torah and to do good with the days of your life. So happiness in the Torah, not I don't have to be on a high, but I could be happy. And I think that there is. I think the message is different. We can spend our lives thinking, I'll be happy when, and that when could always be when I'm married, when I have kids, when I'm wealthy, when I'm retired, when. No. The repeated message that we're going to see throughout Koheles is be happy now. Don't wait to be happy. Ki nismach. Yadati ki ein tov bam. There's nothing good in humanity, says Shlomo HaMelech. If you're waiting for that great thing that's going to make you happy, it's not happening. Don't wait for it. Ein tov bam. The only good that's going to be is kim nismach, if you can be happy now. So what am I supposed to be happy about? Be happy in the happiness of the Torah. Be happy in the mitzvahs. Be happy. Happiness of Torah. Not happiness that is connected to what? To eight lata'at. If you're going to connect your happiness to the physical world, well, the physical world isn't in your control. That's what Shlomo HaMelech was just saying. You can do everything perfect and it's not going to work out perfectly. So that's why Shlomo says, if you want to know what's good, what's the tov, you want to then be happy with something that's not contingent on it, that's not contingent on the physical world. Like you said, you could be the best violinist, but no one's hiring. So now you say, how could I be happy? It's not a time where I'm going to make a parnasa through playing the violin. I'm cleaning up the garbages. So your happiness should be from the happiness of the Torah, which can be learning Torah, which can be the mitzvot. Happiness can't be contingent on the physical world because you have no control over the physical world. So Shlomo HaMelech says, you know what's good in life? Good in life is when you could be happy, but that's not enough. V'la'asot tov b'chayav. And to do good. Now, you and I think of doing good and being happy with doing good. And maybe Shlomo HaMelech meant that. But maybe he didn't mean that. Maybe he meant that's the good life. The good life is when you could do good. It's not only because of the happiness that comes out of it. It's also because that is the good life. Are you following what I'm saying?
Kind of.
Okay. Let's start differently. You have a guy that says, I'm doing mitzvot, and I'll get the world to come. So who are you serving? You're serving yourself, because you want to get
the
world to come.
It's the ends, like doing the good is the end of itself.
Right. I agree with you that there's a byproduct of happiness, but it's the ends, the goal is the good. Someone came to me and said to me, they were in a wheelchair, and someone came and offered them help and said, what do you mean? I'm doing a mitzvah. So they answered the person. They said, oh, so I'm your tool to Olam Haba? There's truth to that. There's truth to that. So that's what I'm saying. I'm not sure if maybe Shlomo HaMelech did not say that because the end is the good itself. The good is not a means for happiness.
Doing the mitzvah for the mitzvah's sake isn't always the right thing, then. Like, you should be doing it for the sake of the benefit of the other person as well, because you know that doing that good.
Yeah. That's a very interesting balance. That deserves a class in and of itself. But again, in a nutshell, Hashem wants us both. Meaning there's this conflict. Am I giving tzedakah to the poor because I care for him? Then I'm not doing it because Hashem said so. Am I doing because Hashem said so? So what kind of human being am I? I don't care for him. So both have to be there. I have to care and I have to do it because Hashem said so. So that's a difficult balance. How do you maintain that balance?
Have a kavanah, say like what a wonderful thing Hashem did by commanding us to give this to help this person.
It's a balance. They both have to be there. I remember when I got engaged, so I didn't want to put up an invitation in yeshiva. Because I said the guys are learning and I don't really need them to come to engagement, and why should they be involved with the Torah? My Rebbeim gave me over the head for it. And then when came time for the wedding, so I didn't want to invite my Rebbeim because I knew some of them would fly in from the U.S. and I didn't feel it was worth their tircha. You know, it's a lot of money and I couldn't give them free tickets.
That's up to them.
Oh, so not only did one of my Rebbeim give me over the head and say it's up to me, he said to me the following speech. He said, look, the Torah gives us a mitzvah to be mesameh chasan and kala, to be happy with them. But I have to tell you, it's not just the Torah. I'm really happy with your simcha. There's one mitzvah that I do, and I think I do it right. It's that I'm really happy with your simcha. It's not just because the Torah said so. The Torah trains me to be the type of person who is really happy to be a part of your simcha. When I'm coming because I am happy to be there. Hashem told me to be happy, but I am happy. I've developed, meaning the way he presented it was that the Torah taught me to develop that trait within me. And then that trait becomes, I'm really happy. It's both. I'm doing it because the Torah said so, but the Torah said so to train me to have that midah, and I have that midah of being happy in your simcha.
But then there's a third dimension to it as well. Like, if you're doing the mitzvah for the sake of the mitzvah, for the sake of the person benefiting the mitzvah, or doing it for yourself.
But they're not mutually exclusive.
Well, I remember Dafka, there was this one person that had a very, very, very traumatic life. The dad was abusive, they ran away, the mother left home or whatever, so, a lot of siblings that were abusive or whatever. So this person ended up running away from home, and she essentially put herself in a situation where she was practically an orphan, and she was going through a lot of depression. She was bored with her life or whatever, and I said to her, I was like, listen, in a very unique situation, go see if you can find an orphanage or whatever and help other kids that are going through this sort of thing. And, you can share your experience with them, they can share their experience with you, you'll learn, you'll be able to help them out, you can play big sister role sort of thing too, and you know, you're gonna find that it's gonna make you happier too. But like, the original suggestion behind it wasn't necessarily for the sake of the people in the orphanage. It was because I knew it would make this person happier.
I agree that that component exists. I just think that maybe Shlomo HaMelech was coming with an ideal that should not take center stage. I agree with you, the component exists. But I think that maybe that's why he switched the order.
But is it necessarily wrong, though, if it's
no. That way? I don't think that sometimes that's good. But that's not the ideal. You're dealing with a situation. You're coming to remedy the situation, so fine. So you're using the tool. But at the end of the day, he's painting an ideal. So he's saying, you want to know what's ideal in life? The ideal is you have to be able to be happy without the other things, because the other things are not in your control. Hashem made it that you cannot master science. Go figure when the stock market's going up and down. If you could figure it out, you could be a millionaire, but you can't figure it out. That's why the whole world isn't a millionaire. There are a lot of things. You can't master the world.
Works, never mind.
Like, say that, but I'm giving that as an example, because that's a very simple example that we all see. No one's mastered it.
If everyone had simultaneously figured it out, it wouldn't work anyway, I guess. You know, like, everyone would suddenly sell, and then what?
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you do good without being happy?
Yeah. I'll tell you where we see it. Naomi, there's in the Megillah of Rus, so Naomi says, Kimali Meod Mikim. Some of the Mefarshim learn that she says, I am so embittered over you. She's coming and she cares about them. She's a... Ma olech po? Where is she? Where is... she lost her husband, she lost her children, she's impoverished, she's coming back to Eretz Yisrael. But her whole life is in ruins. She doesn't have a future. She's coming back destroyed. What does she say? Oh, I'm so destroyed over you. So Naomi could care for them at a level where her life isn't relevant. So what does that show us? That her care was really for them. Meaning, without a byproduct. What did you ask? Can a person do good for someone else without being happy themselves?
So, have them be doing the good without being happy.
Oh, so I think that if I really care about them, then I might be happy because whatever the outcome is, but it doesn't even play a role. I'm saying, well, a giant like Naomi could have her whole life in ruins and tell them, but what's most important to me is you. Malimod mikem. Lo mimeni. Malimod mikem. I'm so embittered over you. That means if a person can attain a madrega where they really, really, really care about the other person, it's not the same simcha. What's the simcha we really sense when we help someone else? The simcha is self-fulfillment. Because we don't see beyond ourselves so much. So even when I'm helping him, I'm happy because now I'm a better person. Because, look at what I did. It's about me. When Naomi could say, my whole life is in ruins, but I want you to know the thing that bothers me most right now is you. Is your situation, your suffering. So then, it's not her self-fulfillment. There isn't an element of ego, of herself, of her caring for herself and helping the others. Quite the contrary. She's doing what's most hurtful to herself, and she's not doing it to realize her own potential. What's part of our problem or our benefit when we do chesed with others? That we feel like I'm realizing my potential, and we need that. We need that feeling of satisfaction. Look at what I did today. I think that Naomi shows us a totally different level of chesed. Where I could do chesed and have nothing of myself in that chesed. Mimela, if there's happiness, I'm happy for him, but it's not my happiness, it's about my fulfillment. What's our happiness when we help an orphan? We feel like, my life is worth something. I'm a good person. Look at what I did. I, it's all about me.
Burying the dead.
That happiness, I'm saying, even burying the dead. Look at what I did. I did something worthwhile with my life. It's I helped the dead. I did such a big mitzvah. It's still all about me. I'm not really happy for the dead. I'm not on that madrega. Naomi was on that madrega. So I'm saying there is such a madrega where a person really cares about the other, and then that byproduct of happiness is not there because the tov was not about fulfilling me. It's not even a part of the cheshbon. But those are giants. No one's saying it. Obviously she's happy for them, but that's not the happiness we're talking about. We're talking about the happiness that we feel fulfilled. And on our level, that happiness is good. It's important. Why shouldn't I feel good? I did something good. On our level, say that. I'm entitled to that. Did you want something?
No. Okay. When we do decide that it's probably the time to hit the hay.
Huh?
Where's the best spot to set up sleeping bags? Still a little bit longer, but I don't want to.
After that pole, so the water doesn't drip on you. After that pole.
I really think
and further away from there, because here you don't have a roof, so there's more wind. Okay. So I'm saying this section is where I would recommend it.
Okay, and you had mentioned something about a trench. Am I going to wake up in the middle of the night with something crying on my face like this?
I went to sleep here.
Yehuda
slept here.
Yeah, it's fine.
What?
I noticed there's a lot of gigantic ants because there's food on the ground. We should move the table out, sweep the floor, and then it'll stop the tarantulas and stuff from coming in.
No,
the food,
so I'll tell you, what we saw
there's
here.
There's ants, and the ants will bring the tarantulas. And
what we saw here is that there's a tremendous anthill just beyond this wall. And every night, even when this thing is clean as everything, every night they come swarming across this. Now, my plastic plan before poison. Sukkot was to pour gasoline into their anthill, which I was told kills them. But the best laid plans of mice and men often go astray, and I never got to do it. So this is the last night. Say that.
You don't have a little spray that you can spray a little line around it?
Not here.
Chalk. Yeah, the chalk.
Yeah, it's the last night.
I don't have anything here. I live in Kiryat Moshe. Here I have the bare minimum. I don't.
I have hot water.
I don't think that'll do it.
No, it's a little bit chase them out when we get back on the work.
We tried washing down. There was a time we washed down here every night, so the kids would play here.
Actually, it could be even worse because they could all just run out of the thing and try to come. Everyone's out of it at the same time.
If you come out here at night, I didn't see it the first night, but the whole floor back there is one black mass moving.
Wow, I know it's Israel's like the answer. Another story.
This is huge. Like if that bites you, it's like.
I remember I was in Rapid Shemesh one time. I was walking and it was a good like.
What? So I'm telling you, even when we're eating here, but there was all summer when we were here, we didn't use the porch and we'd clean every night, sweep and wash. And still, they have thousands over there, so they walk across the yard. But you have about 100 that come on here. You have thousands literally walking all over there. About 100 make it onto here. And that's when it was crystal clear. They're looking. Stay there if you guys want. Before we go to sleep, we'll watch you. I don't mind. You guys want to call it a night now? Yeah?
Yeah, you can probably hold on for like another 10 or so minutes. I can listen. It's not going to interrupt me or anything.
You want to call it a night now? Okay, so I suggest that let's pause for 5 minutes, clean up, and clear everything here. And that way he'll...